Good morning and welcome to Focus. I'm Craig Cohen. No single issue has been more politicized the last 4 years in healthcare. It's been a topic of much debate and discussion in the halls of Congress, in town halls across America, in the Supreme Court, and, of course, during the presidential election campaign. But so much of that debate is more about politics than it is about clarifying what the legislation has put into effect, what will go into effect, and what ultimately you should know about it as a healthcare consumer. We thought we'd take an hour today to afford you an opportunity to set the politics aside and simply get information about the legislation and how it's impacting our healthcare system and ultimately you. To do so, I am joined today by two guests. Claudia Lenhoff is Executive Director of Champaign County Healthcare Consumers. Claudia, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having us here.
Glad to have you with us. And John Katsinas is a manager with insurance broker Barham Benefit Group in Champaign. John's also formerly with Health Alliance Medical Plans. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Craig.
Any and all questions about our healthcare system and what the Affordable Care Act has and will do are welcome. The one rule this hour, and this is, of course, especially challenging during a presidential campaign amid the major party conventions, we're trying to leave politics out of today's discussion. There are many other places and many other opportunities to express what you do and don't like about the political implications of the Affordable Care Act. Today is all about how the system works and what you as a consumer ought to know about it. So to join the conversation, please call 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. That's 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. You can also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. We also welcome your questions on WILL's Facebook page. And in fact, I have a number of questions to share up front from listeners who posed questions in recent days on Facebook. And I'm going to start with a question from William, who asks, by what point do I have to have insurance to avoid a tax penalty?
Oh, boy. Well, the law is planning and hoping for people to enroll in 2014. And if people do not enroll and aren't in an exempt category, I think the tax penalties begin in that year. Now, it takes a while to actually be assessed the penalty and then to pay the penalty because this is going through the tax system. And then the penalties, I believe, increase over time so that they become, you know, they become greater. And John has been so kind as to provide me with some information here that you can actually provide that.
Well, thank you, Claudia. In 2014, the penalty for an individual, if applicable, is the greater of $95 or 1% of your taxable income. 2015, it goes up to $325 or 2% of taxable income. And in 2016, the greater of $695 or 2.5% of taxable income.
Okay, so that's what the penalties would be if you did not, by that time, have health insurance of some type.
Correct.
Okay. William goes on to ask, what options are available for the unemployed and for veterans?
Okay. Well, for the in 2014, when there is the big expansion of health insurance coverage for everybody, it's going to come in two forms, either in the form of expanded Medicaid or in the form of private insurance that can be purchased through the exchange. And for somebody who is unemployed and presumably very low income, they would probably qualify for Medicaid. I want to give you a sense of the numbers for that.
Okay.
Medicaid will be made. One of the big things that will happen in 2014 is that Medicaid, which is a state insurance program with federal funding, it's an insurance program for low-income individuals. Right now, it also has categorical requirements. So if you are a single individual with no children and you're low income, that is not a category that can get Medicaid. In 2014, the categorical requirements go away, and there will only be income requirements. And basically, anybody who is at 138% of the federal poverty level or below will be eligible to receive Medicaid. And so that's about $15,400 in annual income. Anybody who has less income than that will be able to qualify for Medicaid. Now, if this gentleman is a veteran, I think depending on where he lives, he may or may not have easy access to health care through the Veterans Administration,
mm-hmm.
but that option should not change. That option should exist right now, and it's an option that should not change for him in 2014.
Okay. We have questions from Becky, and she points out that pre-existing conditions are no longer allowed under the Affordable Care Act, but she asks, when does it go into effect for adults? She knows children are already covered.
That's a good question. It goes into effect in 2014. Yes, and because that is when the health exchange will go into effect. That's sort of the marketplace where people seeking individual or small group plans will go to purchase their health insurance. And, you know, that's sort of the very big rollout of health reform. And it's not just how we're going to shop for insurance and compare insurance and get subsidies for our insurance, but it also brings on a lot of new protections and regulations, including that one.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about these health insurance exchanges. Who can apply for insurance through them beginning in 2014? Who does this apply to?
In 2014, individuals can apply, as well as businesses with 25 or fewer employees or full-time equivalents of employees.
And why would an individual or a small business want to do that versus employer-based health care as we've known it?
Well, it could involve saving money. It could involve saving money for the employer. Kind of depends on the situation. We don't know anything about the Illinois exchange because it hasn't really been set up. We're a little bit behind some of the other states in that regard.
And so every state will do their own exchange.
Yes. I just wanted to add one of the reasons that an individual or an employer may want to purchase health coverage through the exchange is because also if they are eligible for either a tax credit or tax subsidy to help make their health coverage more affordable, that, like John said, that may make the health insurance plan even more affordable beyond whatever the sticker price is for the health insurance plan. There will also be a lot more regulations and rules and transparency within the exchange. So there may be, you know, hopefully if Illinois sets it up right, that's one of the things that we should gain is an exchange that actually provides greater transparency, has more regulation of the insurance products that are there, and greater consumer protections. And so there may be a number of different reasons why somebody would want to go through the exchange.
Will anyone be required to purchase health insurance through an exchange?
People will be required to purchase health insurance. I think that if an individual, I don't think they have to purchase it through the exchange. In fact, that's one of the features of the exchange. If you have a plan right now that you like and that plan is still in effect in 2014, you do not have to go through the exchange. You can just keep what you have. However, again, I think from a consumer perspective, there are a lot of reasons why consumers would want to take a look at the exchange, not just for all the protections and regulations, but again, remember that there will be opportunities to receive subsidies depending on the person's income level. And actually, you know, we talked earlier about people who might qualify for Medicaid, but people who would qualify for people who are purchasing private health insurance can also receive subsidies through the exchange. And the subsidies will be available for people who are between 139% of the federal poverty level and 400% of the federal poverty level. And those numbers, just so you know, if it's an individual, that's an individual who earns up to about $44,680 would qualify for a subsidy. A family of four earning about $92,000 plus would also qualify for a subsidy. So there are a lot of reasons to look at the exchange.
This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen, and my guests today are Claudia Lenhoff, Executive Director of Champaign County Healthcare Consumers, and John Katsinas, Manager of Insurance Broker Barham Benefit Group of Champaign. We're discussing the Affordable Care Act, what's in it, what's not, what's in effect, what will go into effect, and what it all means for you. And as crazy as it may sound, our goal is to make this a politics-free hour and just answer your questions about the healthcare system itself and the legislation's impact on it. To join us on air, you can call 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. You can email your question to will-talk@illinois.edu. The phone number again is 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. I have a couple more questions from Becky via Facebook. Again, getting back to pre-existing conditions. She says, will it cover health care provided by businesses with under 50 employees? Is that a specific number of
consideration? Generally, a small business is the sort of definition of a small business is one that has 50 or fewer employees, and there will be an exchange where small businesses can purchase those small group plans, and so that they should be able to go to the exchange and get all of those benefits and new regulations applied to the insurance plan that they cover. Illinois is still, as John said, Illinois is still in the process of figuring out how it's going to set up its exchange. Some states are setting up separate exchange for individual plans and a separate one for small group plans. And then some might set them up separately and then join them together at some point in time. It's still a little bit up in the air for Illinois.
And she also raises, John, with pre-existing conditions no longer being, you know, it's no longer allowed to drop someone because of that. Will that be the case for individually purchased insurance plans or plans offered by the state pools? And I guess it all applies across
absolutely
the board.
Absolutely. Right. I might also point out that in the event Illinois is not completely ready to do its own exchange, I believe that the federal government will step in and do it for them. Isn't that right, Claudia?
Yes. Actually, you know, because the Supreme Court decision. People were waiting for the Supreme Court decision. A lot of states, legislators and governors didn't want to act on creating the exchange, but therefore fell behind on the timeline of what is required to create the exchange. And so the federal government offered actually this option of a federal-state partnership in setting up the exchange. And Governor Quinn has said that that's what he would want to do for Illinois. And so Illinois is currently working with the feds to set up this partnership exchange. And then I think the goal would be that in 2015, the state would take over entirely the exchange. And I just wanted to comment, Becky, I think, who asked those questions, is very knowledgeable. And I think it's very important for people to understand that right now, one of the new benefits or protections in effect since the health reform law was passed is that insurance companies can no longer place annual or lifetime limits on your coverage and cannot rescind your coverage if you become ill. And this is really important. We've seen the benefits of that at Healthcare Consumers because several years ago, we would get calls on a regular basis from insured individuals who were diagnosed with a cancer or something like that, and then were having their insurance coverage rescinded. And that doesn't happen anymore, and it won't happen in the future.
Addition to that, currently, part of the Affordable Care Act, insurance carriers must spend, I believe it's 80% to 85% of the premium dollar on actual health care,
which
is an additional protection.
Yes, and some people have actually gotten rebates from their insurance companies when their insurance companies failed to meet that requirement.
I'm going to run home and check my mail now, Claudia.
Don't hold your breath.
John, as kids can no longer be declined for insurance based on pre-existing conditions, what impact has that rule had on whether insurance companies are writing new individual policies on children without a parent on the plan with them? Are they?
Different carriers have different policies in place for that. Right now, most carriers, I mean, up until this year, were only writing policies for dependents if they were included with their parent or some other sponsor. Now what they're doing is there's certain limited plans they'll offer for kids who are 18 only, but those may be pretty restrictive and they may have certain specific dates of enrollment where people can get on.
So where maybe in the past you could get an insurance policy for, you know, let's say you have a child is born, you want to put them on an health insurance plan. Now when they are as healthy as they could possibly be, right? They haven't lived very long and you know, maybe the best possible circumstances. That's something that insurance companies maybe are not.
Well, right now, if I have a child and I have an existing health care policy, whether it's individual or group, then I can add my child right away.
Right.
Let's say I'm on a group health plan and maybe my employer is paying for my insurance, but maybe to add a dependent, it might be very expensive to add. Then I can't at this time easily get a child-only policy, whereas before health care reform, I could. Once again, in 2014, this will all be simplified and I think be much more clear to understand by the public.
Well, when you say that, does that mean, though, starting in 2014, you would be able to get an insurance policy on a child under 18 independent of their parents, independent of employer plans?
That is my understanding. It may not be in your best interest to do so. And it just kind of depends on – I get questions like this all the time. People are wondering what's the most economical way to get insurance, you know, an individual policy, put her on my wife's plan or my plan at work or whatever. And hopefully we'll see some clarification here in the future.
This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen, and we're taking your questions about the Affordable Care Act on today's program. My guests are John Katsinas, manager of insurance broker Barham Benefit Group of Champaign, and Claudia Lenhoff, executive director of Champaign County Healthcare Consumers. We welcome your questions about what the Affordable Care Act includes, what it doesn't, what's already in effect, what isn't yet, and what it all means for healthcare consumers like you. Call us at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455, or you can email will-talk@illinois.edu. We also welcome questions and comments on WILL's Facebook and Twitter pages or on our website, will.illinois.edu/focus. The phone number again, 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. And we'll begin with Scott in Bloomington, Illinois. Good morning, Scott.
Morning. I was wondering, after 2014, is it going to matter a whole lot who I get my insurance from, or the regulations going to make most of the policies pretty much, you know, the same as another, other than maybe I like Barham and Associates a little more?
All right.
Thank you.
John, what's your impression? I'm going to ask this to both of you. Okay. What's your impression of what will happen 2014 and beyond?
Well, plans offered through an exchange will be standardized. Now, it could be that one carrier charges a different price than the other. The idea of the exchange is that all this information will be come together so that with transparency and detail, someone can make an informed, educated decision.
All right, Claudia?
Yes, I agree. I think that it'll be worthwhile to really examine the information on the exchange, which can let you look at several plans that are similar, but let you look at them side by side, compare the pricing. The pricing may be close, but it won't necessarily be the same. And one of the things to know is that all of the plans are going to have to offer what are called essential health benefits. These are sort of 10 categories of coverage, but how they provide that coverage, what the cost-sharing responsibility is going to be, in other words, your out-of-pocket responsibility, may vary. And so people will still have to shop around, but the shopping and comparing will be made a lot easier. There'll be a lot more transparency, and you'll be able to look at side-by-side comparisons. But there will still be difference in prices. There will be difference in some of the additional areas of coverage or benefits that they provide.
All right. Thanks very much for that call, Scott. Let's go next to Ray in Effingham. Hi, Ray.
Hi. My question was, I'm self-employed and my business isn't very good. I'm just by myself. Would I still be eligible being self-employed with a business to shop for health care?
Absolutely. You would just be applying as an individual. You could apply directly to a carrier. You can go through the health exchange, as Claudia said. But certainly those options would be available to you.
Absolutely. This is actually the self-employed individuals have one of the highest rates of uninsurance of, you know, a category of workers, because it is so hard to get an individual plan, especially if somebody has pre-existing conditions. And so the health exchange will actually be a tremendous benefit to people like Ray who are self-employed and have had a hard time getting insurance.
A big feature of the Reform Act, a lot of people are not aware, there are people out there that desperately want and need health insurance that can afford it that can't get them. For instance, let's say I had cancer 7 years ago. No one's going to write me an individual policy at this time, even if I said I can pay $2,000 a month for it. And so that can really fall on people like Ray who are self-employed, not part of a group. If they have health conditions, that can really be a problem for them at this time.
Now, real quick, that brings me to, I just wanted to make mention of the Illinois Pre-Existing Condition Plan.
Right.
So this is one of the benefits of health reform that has been enacted. And if people want to look it up on the computer, they can just Google IPXP, thank you, my anyway, IPXP, they can Google that, and it'll take you to the homepage for that. And this is an insurance plan that is federally funded, provided through the state, and it is for people like what John just described, people who have pre-existing conditions that have made it virtually impossible for them to get health insurance, and people who have been denied coverage or can't afford the coverage that they've been offered. And it's relatively affordable. It will go away in 2014 because it will not be necessary anymore. People right now who are in the IPXP will end up being able to go and get their health insurance through the exchange.
So this is an option for somebody who fits that sort of condition.
Yes.
They had some sort of pre-existing medical condition that's made it unlikely, if not impossible, for them to find insurance through an insurance company, so they can go through this program, have insurance, up until the point when in 2014,
yes,
everyone, regardless of any pre-existing conditions, is automatically still allowed to receive insurance, the insurance companies can't turn them down.
That's correct,
okay.
And it's available right now.
Okay. Thanks, Ray, for that call. Let's go next to Walter in Champaign. Hi, Walter.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Two questions. One of our problems is that the, you know, overall cost of health care is so large compared to other countries, and also that keeps growing. You know, every 10 years, insurance premiums have doubled. Am I right, recently?
Is that correct, would you say?
Yes.
We're approaching 20% of GDP.
All right. Well, we're getting largely nods, I think, from both John and Claudia. So that's true in terms of the cost.
So
yes,
my first question is, how does this health care law address that problem? How is it going to decrease the rate of growth of health care? And then my second part of my question is, if you look at, you know, any objective measures and metrics of quality of health care delivery, very disappointed to see the United States so low compared to countries like Finland and even Great Britain and Canada, and all sorts of metrics across the board. You know, we hear about having the greatest healthcare system in the world, these facts notwithstanding. And so my question is, how is this new Obamacare going to improve quality?
Okay. Thanks very much for the call and those questions. Let's start with cost. What will all these changes ultimately mean for the bottom line of the cost of health care for most Americans? I mean, are we talking about ultimately this will cost more, this will cost less, it's a wash? What's your observation?
Well, the fact is right now that Americans are paying a lot for health care as it is, because if someone goes to an emergency room to get treated and they have no insurance and they can't afford to pay, then that organization has to figure out how to recover those costs everywhere else down the line. So we all pay more for our health insurance, one could argue, because of people that don't have health insurance. What the Affordable Care Act hopes to do by bringing in approximately altogether 30 million more people into some sort of insurance program, you've got a lot more people to spread the costs over. And so they want that to reduce the costs. Some of the real cost savings will come in down the line with the accountable care organizations, which kind of start to kick in around 2018. And that's where they're trying to do some rather creative things in how doctors work with hospitals and other care organizations to provide services at a lower cost overall.
Yes, I agree. I'm not sure that I have too much more to add, except for that, you know, part of the reason that costs are so high is because of the huge disparities, you know, in our nation in terms of people who don't have health insurance and then people who do. And of course, there's also the profit motive that is built into private insurance. And one of the cost containment mechanisms in the health reform law is something that John talked about earlier, which is the medical loss ratio, where there is now some regulation about that, where insurance companies are required to allocate 80 to 85% of your premium dollars directly for paying for the health care that you receive. And that means less premium dollars going to advertising and CEOs' compensation and things like that.
Yeah, but how can that really be tracked and measured effectively? I mean, it would seem that, yes, there are some costs, some things that health insurance providers could spend money on where you'd say fairly obviously, well, that doesn't really relate to care. But there may be some, I don't know, public relations programs that they do that you could characterize as advertising, or you could characterize as supporting health and wellness. And so I'm sure there aren't there ways they could get around that?
There are some ways, and actually there has been. If you're sort of a healthcare nerd, you would know that there was this tremendous process of sort of rulemaking and trying to figure out what counts as, you know, what counts as paying for healthcare versus what counts for advertising. And sort of the squishy area for a lot of people is in the health and wellness, in the health and wellness areas. But there's also regulation about what qualifies as a wellness program and things like that. So they are, in fact, actually tracking it. And that has already started happening because, for example, this July was the first time that insured individuals were actually able to start receiving checks coming back from their insurance companies if their insurance companies exceeded the medical loss ratio or didn't meet the medical loss ratio.
I might point out another aspect of the medical loss ratio that perhaps I don't like, but people out there might. Most of the health insurance carriers, when that went into effect, restricted the amount of money that they pay brokers like me to sell their product. So whereas in the past, maybe I was paid on a fixed percentage. So if your health insurance went up 10%, I got a 10% raise. Mm-hmm. That's good for me. That's not necessarily good for the consumer. At Barham, we always put the interests of the client first. But the fact is that it's difficult to expect a group of people to work against their economic self-interests. In the past, if your rates went up, compensation to the broker went up. That's no longer the case.
So that could create an environment then, I guess, where maybe you might have fewer brokers out there selling health insurance if the percentage that they receive through the process is smaller.
Well, I hope so, Craig. Don't you think there's too many of them out there? I certainly do, as long as we're still around. But anyway, the whole idea is that, you know, that could be a good thing for consumers from the standpoint that a broker finding the best package for his client would not be working against his economic self-interest.
Gotcha.
But I do think the caller is right on. I think he has a very good analysis. It's an analysis that I agree with. There are many, many components to the health reform law that are designed actually to do cost containment. There are provisions within Medicare. Some people may have heard of Medicare cuts. There's actually been no cuts to the Medicare program that will result in cuts to Medicare beneficiaries' services. The cuts that took place out of the Medicare program were actually in cuts to overpayments to Medicare Advantage plans, and then that money is reinvested into the healthcare system. There's also a lot of provisions that deal with, John talked about the move towards accountable care organizations, but for example, with Medicare, some provisions that deal with moving away from fee-for-service and looking more at different ways of delivering care that have better outcomes. And so there's a lot of provisions. I think some of it, time will tell, you know, but I do think that there should be some gain for our nation just from the fact of providing coverage for millions more people and giving people access to preventive care and basic health care, early detection and treatment of problems. And I think there will also be cost savings to businesses, for example, in terms of they'll be able to compete on a more level playing field if small businesses now are able to all get their employees insured. And then hopefully there will also be reductions in lost productivity from when people are sick and can't go and get the health care that they need to get well in a timely way. So I think there'll be a lot of benefits like that.
We've mostly talked about what will be going into effect, what will be potential benefits down the road. And we just started to get into some provisions that are already in effect. So what I want to do is talk about what's already in effect in just a couple of a minute or so. But we are due to take a short break here. This is Focus.
4 years ago in Denver, Democrats nominated Barack Obama for president.
With profound gratitude and great humility, I accept your nomination for presidency of the United States.
This week, President Obama addresses the Democratic Convention in Charlotte. I'm Mara Liasson. Join us for special coverage from NPR News.
Coverage starts tonight at 7.
WILL programming is made possible by Columbia Street Roastery, offering over 30 varieties and blends of whole bean or ground coffee at 24 East Columbia in Champaign. Coffee, tea, and chai are available from their retail store, in local restaurants, and through Columbia Street Roastery's coffee service. More information is available at 352-9713.
This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen, and we're discussing the provisions and timeline of the Affordable Care Act with Claudia Lenhoff, Executive Director of Champaign County Healthcare Consumers, and John Katsinas, Manager of Insurance Broker Barham Benefit Group of Champaign. We welcome any and all questions you may have about what the Affordable Care Act does and does not address and how it may impact your healthcare. The phone number is 333-9455 or 800-222-9455, or you can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. The phone number again, 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. Okay, so let's talk about some of the provisions that have already taken effect in the Affordable Care Act. And let's go back to 2010 when the law was passed and initially went into effect. Claudia, the Medicare Part D prescription coverage gap, what people know as the donut hole, was one of the things that was addressed. Could you describe what the gap was, how it's being closed, and what else the Affordable Care Act provides for those who fall into that coverage gap?
Okay. Well, my professional opinion is that the Part D donut hole coverage gap is one of the worst inventions of insurance ever. It basically is people who have the Part D plan, that's prescription drug coverage for Medicare beneficiaries. It had this built-in gap in coverage, and it changed over time. But it basically said that if your drug costs, your total drug costs, including what the insurance company pays and what we pay, exceed a certain amount of money, and it changed each year. But let's say it was, $2,800 to $4,200. While your costs are in that range, your Part D plan would stop paying any benefits at all, would stop paying for your prescriptions at all. You had to shoulder all of that responsibility, all of that cost. And then once you got out of the donut hole, then your insurance company would kick back in and start providing coverage again, and you would go back to your regular copays. It's a terrible idea. Nobody would really ever willingly purchase a plan that had a huge gap in coverage. This has been a national outrage. It has really hurt a lot of seniors. And so one of the benefits of health reform is actually to start closing that gap. And to so it takes several years, but that was one of the first benefits to go into effect, is that the donut hole gap would start shrinking over time. And some seniors were able to receive a rebate to help them get through that gap. And then there were also other changes that happened where certain name brand drugs, you know, were reduced in price, or generic drugs were reduced in price. It's still really a problem, but over time that gap in coverage will shrink. And John can probably add
I might point out that this wasn't created by the carriers. This was created by Congress when they passed the Part D legislation years ago. Their theory at the time, and I believe that at that time the gap started after you'd spent $2,250, was that 75% of seniors' annual average consumption of pharmaceuticals was under the $2,250. So the theory was that was fine for 75%, which perhaps it was. It was that other 25% that, one, may not have the resources to cover the gap, and two, might not be able to totally understand all these numbers and how to get from A to B. That was kind of the problem.
Plus, I would imagine that prescription drug costs go up over time, that when this was passed, that may have been 75%, but I bet that percentage suddenly became much smaller year after year.
I think that that's correct. I feel like at our organization, we know all of the 25% of the people who have fallen into the gap.
Right.
But I think you're right. But under the health reform law, the donut hole should be closed completely by 2020.
And so each year it gets a little bit smaller.
Yes.
And then you mentioned rebates and discounts on prescription drugs. All of that kicked into effect in 2010. right?
It's kicking in incrementally.
Everything
yes.
is incremental there.
Yes.
Okay. All right, let's go into another item that went into effect in 2010. John, young adults 19 to 25 can remain on their parents' health care plan. That's new as of 2010. Are we seeing signs that families are taking advantage of that?
Absolutely. One of the things that happened in the past was once someone turned 19 or turned 23, if they were in college, they were kicked off their parents' plan. Well, as long as they were able to get health insurance, either through an employer or on their own, I guess that might not be a problem. For people with health conditions, that was a huge problem. Now, by extending it 3 more years, that allows people to cover their kids, even if they're not living at home. And one of the other things that was happening at the time was somebody would be 23, you're more likely to have an entry-level job, which may be less likely to offer group health insurance. And so this really kind of helped plug a gap there.
The other thing that it did also is it removed the requirement that the young adult be a college student or have to be single and not married. Now it doesn't matter whether that young adult up to age 26 is in college or isn't in college, is married or isn't married. Just they you know, if they are offered health insurance through their employer, then they need to try to do that. But otherwise, they can get in on their parents' health insurance plan.
My daughter just got married Sunday, and both she and her husband are very happy that she's still allowed to stay on our health insurance.
I have an email here from George who asks a question that applies to another element of the Affordable Care Act that went into effect in 2010. He says, I have 3 employees in my company and cannot afford health insurance. What happens to my company? That's his question. Claudia, small businesses are now eligible, as I understand it, for tax credits to help provide insurance to workers. Are people in situations like George's in aware of that?
A lot of times people are not aware of that. But one of the things that I want to say about that is the tax credit is great. Like for an organization like Healthcare Consumers, we provide health coverage to our employees, and it is very difficult. It's very expensive. But because we were already providing health coverage, then it was easy for us to take advantage of the tax rebate. I think if you're a small company that has not yet been able to afford to provide coverage, I don't know that the rebate would be enough to make it affordable. So I really have sympathy for the small business employers who are trying to do this. It's the rebate, Healthcare Consumers got a rebate. We paid over $30,000 last fiscal year in providing health coverage to our employees, and we got a rebate of $2,859. Okay. Now, our costs, which was great, but our costs had gone up by double digits, you know, in terms of the cost of premiums. So the rebate really for us just sort of took the sting out of the increases in the costs. But once, if he is not able to provide coverage right now, once 2014 comes along, he will be able to do that, or his employees may be able to purchase insurance through the individual plan. Right now, what I would say is if he is not providing coverage, he could contact somebody like John Katsinas to see what are the small group plans that are out there. And John is actually one of the people who helped us understand what to expect in the form of the rebate, and he could sort of see would it be affordable.
But in George's case, should he expect anything dramatically different by 2014 and beyond in terms of his ability to afford health insurance? If the numbers are kind of what you described for your company, I would imagine for him trying to insure 3 employees, if he can't afford to do it at all right now, how much are we talking about? I imagine we're talking hundreds a month for each employee, right?
Some industry gurus feel that between the exchanges and some of the ways that insurance figures to be priced in 2014, that the small group market might get more competitive. That could be an advantage to George. The other thing that he's got going for him is since he's under 50 employees, there would be no penalty afforded to him for not offering health insurance if indeed that becomes the case.
Yeah, his employees could actually get individual coverage through the exchange. He could actually help subsidize that if he wanted, and then he could get a tax credit for helping to subsidize that.
But he's not required to get it himself
that's correct.
His employees.
That's correct, by virtue of the size of his organization. One thing I did want to mention that I'm actually very excited about when the exchange takes effect, that will help groups like ours. We have mostly female employees. And right now in the state of Illinois, insurance companies are allowed to do gender rating. That's a nice insurance industry term for gender discrimination, where they price policies for females way, way higher than for males. And when the exchange takes effect, the gender rating, they won't be able to do gender rating anymore.
Claudia is right on that, especially organizations that had children of childbearing years. That could be a negative for them. At the same time, I must also point out that the discrimination against males versus women at my age, they would charge more for me than a woman who was only 59. So I'm all for ending discrimination.
Yes.
All right, let's take another call. We and coincidentally have a small business owner on the line. Jeff is in Geneva. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. I love this topic. I don't know if everybody's paying attention to it as much as they should be. I have a couple of comments. One is, since I started this business in 94, it's gotten extremely expensive just to stay afloat to keep it running. With insurance and all these other things that I'm supposed to buy into, the certificates for here, they change things, we got to get this. Anyway, long story short, my family, most of my family lives in Europe, okay? It seems like the majority of these people out here in America want to be, have the same kind of things that Europeans do as far as health care. And I got to tell you, it's a nightmare. Every one of my family members thinks we're nuts. Everybody that I know that lives in Europe thinks we're nuts because they have so many problems with their health care system. And I'll give you an example, all right? One of my cousins happened to work for Swissair, and he had to have some surgery done on his foot. Well, it's take a number. Because it wasn't an emergency, it was an elective, I think, he had to wait in line. His foot got so infected, he had to amputate it because he had to wait in line.
Well, let me stop you there because I want to ask John, anything of what he just described, is there anything in the Affordable Care Act that relates to that sort of concept?
No, okay. There isn't. I mean, in other words, there's not really anything involved restriction of care. I must say I'm not very familiar with how health care works in Europe. When I worked at Health Alliance, we'd get people coming in to buy individual health insurance who were from Europe and other countries and trying to explain our health care system to them as it relates to insurance was not a fun thing to do.
Well, and I'm curious, Claudia, because it feels like I think that there is that perception out there that maybe the Affordable Care Act in some way relates to what other countries do with their health care systems. But at the same time, I know a big part of the debate going into it, again, trying to keep away from the politics of it, was how do we fold in health insurance companies into this conversation.
Right. Yeah, I think the Affordable Care Act doesn't really line up with any European model or any industrialized nation model. I have relatives in Finland who get very good health care and are very happy. The Affordable Care Act, I think, tried to build on the existing system and structure and just bring more people into it. So that means the existing system and structure involves private insurance. So there's an expansion of making private insurance affordable to individuals and small group employers. And then also an expansion of Medicaid. Medicare stays intact, so that program continues as it has. So this is really a pretty American model of how we're trying to achieve universal health care. It's personally not how I would have designed it. I think it's so complicated because it on purpose doesn't change a lot of the existing structures. It just tries to add more people into it. It's very complicated. But it's just what was politically feasible, I think, at this point in time.
All right, Jeff, exactly. I think you wanted to get back in there with a question. Go ahead, Jeff.
No, you know, she's saying it exactly. And the way I would, my concern is they're trying to do this. I think several presidents in the past have tried to do this. And now, because they got a majority vote in the Democratic side, they got it through. And the only reason they got it through was because of that. It wasn't, I mean, I know people that are politicians that are involved in some of this stuff, and it's insane what they go through. And I do agree that we need some kind of a, you know, system, but here's what they do. Their object of the game is just to pass it through and then deal with the after effects later.
All right. Well, you know, I understand your frustration, and I appreciate your call. I'm going to cut off that part of the discussion just because, as I said going into this hour and repeated during the hour, we really wanted to sort of set aside the politics today. We will, I'm sure, have many opportunities to talk about the political implications of the Affordable Care Act, how it came to be, and what's happening going forward politically. But I kind of want to just sort of shy away from that today so that we can just address questions that people have about the system itself. To that end, let's go next to Marlene in Urbana. Marlene.
Yes, hello. I have questions regarding the standardization of the exchanges, the state, since they are set up by each state, I'm assuming there has to be some standardization in the policies. And my question relates to portability from state to state. And also, if that is indeed something that is would be extra to the policy, since obviously a lot of companies are offering these policies in competition with each other, then can that actually increase our costs because of wanting something available that is not part of the standard policy?
Okay. Thanks very much for the question.
Marlene, I feel like you've just stumped the chump in terms of portability. I think that actually a lot of the health insurance plans that are going to compete in the various state exchanges are, just for example, a Blue Cross Blue Shield company, which is, you know, there's Blue Cross Blue Shield in every single state. I think there is going to be some standardization of coverage across states. And also one of the aspects of the exchange is that even though each state will be able to put their imprint on it and have some particular regulations and so on, remember that the federal government still requires 10 essential health benefits to be covered, and then there'll be a variety of plans that may add to that or provide different amounts of coverage for each of those services. But I think a lot of the plans themselves will allow people to have providers in multiple states.
But John, I imagine that if someone thinks they are likely to move from one state to another, and maybe they have a job where they tend to move around quite a bit, that's one of the things they may want to take into consideration is whether or not they care which health care provider they have in every single state. And if they wanted to be consistent, they'd want to go with maybe one of those larger providers. But would they basically go through the process each time they move to another state? They got to select from that state's exchange?
I think one thing to consider, the good thing as opposed to right now. Right now, Marlene, if I have insurance here as an individual and say it's with Health Alliance and I move to Tennessee, I would have to apply for a new policy down there. Perhaps that would create problems. With the guaranteed insurability, perhaps your current plan wouldn't be portable, but you'd know wherever you went in the United States, you would be guaranteed access to various programs competing against each other.
We're down to the last minute or two of the program. I just want to share a few, sort of go over a few other items and make sure that we've sort of hit on everything that's in effect in the Affordable Care Act. We talked about Medicaid funding for states, I believe, earlier. That's part of it already. That's in the system. You mentioned preventive care, and I guess maybe we should just reinforce that. In 2010, mammograms, colonoscopies, they're all free as of 2010. There's no copay. There's no deductible.
That's correct. And that's true also for Medicare.
Okay. And what about annual or lifetime limits on insurance benefits?
Gone.
They're gone. Okay. Has the Affordable Care Act changed the process by which consumers can appeal coverage determinations by insurance companies?
I believe it has. There's greater protections. There's actually I forget what it's called, but it's basically an insured person's bill of rights. Mm-hmm. Now,
right.
Yes.
And there's free wellness visits for seniors that went into effect in 2011.
Yes.
Is the hope, John, there that seniors who by and large make up the bulk of healthcare costs, they're more likely to participate in wellness visits if it's free, and then as a result, maybe if you identify something's wrong, you identify it earlier, it costs less to deal with it.
Absolutely, and I think a big thing that was added and is that rescissions were prohibited, which means that insurance companies couldn't retroactively cancel coverage after enrollment anymore, which appears to have happened some places, not around here, of course, in the past.
Any, just the final seconds here, any major misconceptions that you find keep turning up about the Affordable Care Act? Anything that you say, oh, man, every time people ask about this?
Well, I think that a lot of people just don't know about the new benefits in effect right now. For example, the IPXP program, the new insurance for people with pre-existing conditions. And I think also the other big misconception is that Medicare is being cut. Medicare is not being cut. The overpayments to Medicare Advantage plans are being cut. That's a cost savings. That money is going back into Medicare. But really, nothing is going to change for Medicare beneficiaries, except for now that they can get their wellness and preventive exams and office visits and all of that without a copay. So those are sort of the two biggest misconceptions I hear.
That's going to have to be our last word, but I want to say thank you to our guests, Claudia Lenhoff, Executive Director of Champaign County Healthcare Consumers, and John Katsinas, Manager with Insurance Broker Barham Benefit Group in Champaign. Thank you both for being with us.
Thank you.
On tomorrow's show, it's hard to pass up any book that promotes itself as an existential detective story. That's the subtitle of author Jim Holt's new book, Why Does the World Exist? Who says we don't take on the big questions? We will have that very, I think, fascinating discussion on tomorrow's Focus. Hope you can tune in then. Today's show is produced by Travis Stanzel. Other members of our Focus team are Pam Dempsey, Kimberly Cronick, and Jim Meadows. Kyle Mabry is our technical director and handles your calls. I'm Craig Cohen.